Friday, February 10th, 2017. I'm Kevin Mahoney, editor and founder of Raging Chicken. Each week, I talk to our capital muckraker in chief, Sean Kitchen, about the good, the bad, and the ugly that in state and national politics. Well, it's week three since the Trump Organization took control of the White House, and the floods have not receded, folks. This week, we get more confirmations, including a historic VP tiebreaker. And just last night, a middle-of-the-night vote to confirm a guy by the name of Price. Oh, yeah. And now we also have a racist attorney general. That's always a plus. Right-wing organizations launch a $2 million ad campaign to get their guy on the Supreme Court. More attacks on the media, and Melania Trump lays bare her plans to use her position as First Lady to cash in. Meanwhile, indivisible protests grow, and PA's own Dalen Leach, State Senator Dalen Leach, had finally came up with a term for Trump. Shit gibbon. Hashtag that one, folks. Hashtag that one all day long. Well, and it just gets crazier here in PA. The PA Senate passes a 20-week abortion ban. That bill has its origins in a National Right to Life Committee, something Sean has been reporting on for over a year now. The PA Senate also passes paycheck deception, folks. One step closer to right-to-work state. That's where we are. And let's not forget that white nationalists look to recruit fellow fascists at Berks County colleges and universities. Oh, man, all that and so much more on today's show. Remember, folks, we need to keep this going. And we need you to help keep progressive activist media going strong. You can become a member of Raging Chicken for as little as $2 a month. Seriously, $2 a month. Think about it. Simply go to RagingChickenPress.org and look for the support and membership tab. You can click right there, or you can use the drop-down menu and you click on Become a Member. We're also on Patreon. So if you love Patreon, you're already donating to folks over there, you click on Become a Patron on Patreon. You can donate there or become a member there. And if you're not quite ready to become a member, you can always just click on Donate, and you can give us whatever you want, you know. $10, $25, a couple hundred dollars, that'd be fantastic. And for a limited time, we had great success in one of our exclusive t-shirt designs from last week, alternative Facts Are Lies t-shirts that we launched out on Teespring. We had a great response for that. And as a result, I think we're going to keep some of the exclusive designs coming out maybe once every couple weeks or so. And that really, really is going to go a long way to helping support our efforts, you know, just to keep everything going here and to pay our writers even more. So right now over at Teespring, we have two exclusive designs that are up. The one is 2017 is the new 1984, right? You can get that one on Teespring. Or my personal favorite, right? The design that I am most proud of, the Richard Spencer Project 2017 American Tour. You're just going to have to see that one to see why I love it. So get on over there. We'll put a link in the show notes and check it out and pick one up for you and your best fascist friend. I mean, your best friend. So remember that they'll be available for about the next 10 days or so, and all proceeds from the t-shirts go directly to support our awesome team of writers. And next week, we'll be launching a new exclusive design too as well. Stay tuned. Next week, we're also going to be at the PA or the Keystone Progressive Summit out in Harrisburg. We're going to be doing some live streaming from out there. We're going to be out there with our good friend Rick Smith, and we need you to be out there too as well. So if you're not already signed up to get over there to the Keystone Progress, it's the Hilton in downtown Harrisburg. It's going to be some good times, I think. We're going to do some good organizing. We're going to have almost all of our writers are going to be out there. It's going to be pretty cool. So, you know, we're just digging in for 2017 and Trumplandia, and we need you. I just can't emphasize that enough. We need you, the progressive community, to help us deepen, pull no punches, progressive media that's going to hold power accountable, right? And, like, now more than ever. So, you know, Sean, I guess it is that we're just not going to get a break. The floodwaters are going to continue. We need to build our ark, but we also need to put armaments on that ark.
Yeah, it's going to be a long 4 years, but I am hopeful of all the protests and demonstrations that are going on, and hopefully we can continue that momentum and build those, build our base, and you know, start changing things for the better.
Yeah, I think that's I think that is where hope resides right now, and I think that today I want to actually kind of flip a order. The past couple of weeks, just because of the sheer number of stories coming out of DC and coming out of the Trump organization. We've started off the show with stuff happening nationally with Trump. I mean, obviously it's going to impact us all, but today we're going to flip it around a little bit because the craziness is right here in Pennsylvania, folks. And you can see it coming fast and furious. If you remember a few weeks back, we were covering the launch of Scott Wagner's, announcement that he's going to be pursuing the governorship. He's going to challenge Tom Wolf in 2018. And that's really kind of set the stage along with Trump for some, real craziness that's going out there. Now, Sean, you've been covering this week was, crazy, man. But you've been covering this Senate Bill 3 now for over a year, following its kind of trajectory, where it came from and all that kind of stuff. And this week was a big week for that, right?
Yes. So just to correct that real quickly.
Yeah, no
problem. It wasn't. So last year, there's a couple of bills in the House and Senate right now. One is Senate Bill 3. We learned that there's another one, House Bill 77, which is pretty much a similar language to Senate Bill 3.
Right.
But these two bills have their origin last year with State Representative Kathy Rapp introducing a 20-week abortion ban on a Friday, gets a 4 o'clock in the afternoon, gets a committee vote Monday morning at 9 o'clock in the morning, and then goes right through the Senate, the House process. The bill was eventually stalled, where it wasn't voted on in that month of April. It was actually voted on in the House in June. And so the same thing happened this week. Last week, the bill was introduced early in the session. It was referred to committee Friday afternoon, voted in the Judiciary Committee Monday morning, voted out of the Senate Wednesday afternoon. And last year, I did some research on this bill, figured out that there was a bunch of other states pushing the same type of abortion ban. I was able to find out who was pushing it and where that money was coming from. Koch Brother Group was funding this National Right to Life Committee. And pretty much they developed this model legislation banning all abortions after 20 weeks. And some states have been successful in pushing it. One of the things to note here is that by the 20th week, you know if you're going to have that baby or not, right? You're planning to have that baby. You're getting the baby shower in order. You're picking out the room, picking out the colors to paint the walls, getting the crib ready and stuff like that. And if an abortion occurs after that, it's something catastrophic happens to the fetus, where there's either a severe defect, where the baby's either dead inside the wound, or the baby is going to die shortly after it's given birth, or it's going to live an extremely painful life. And it's an extremely difficult decision to make to have an abortion that late in the pregnancy. And what these people want to do is force women to essentially give birth to a stillborn, or give birth to a child that will be dead within hours, minutes, days, or weeks after it's been born.
Yeah, I mean, this is devastating. I mean, I think you kind of correctly laid it out. I mean, a decision like that is by no means an easy decision. And it's especially when you're talking about kind of receiving the news that something has gone horribly
catastrophically wrong.
Yeah. And then you have to deal with that emotionally. Right. Especially if you're going to be, having kids and the woman who's involved or the family that's involved, that's an incredibly difficult decision. And that's gotta be something that, they're going to have those discussions with their doctors and really kind of think about it that carefully. Instead, here you have, the PA government wanted to step in between women and their doctors, and force a decision in an already incredibly horribly difficult situation. I mean, it's amazing. So where we're at now?
So the bill the bill, it passed the Senate. The legislature is off for the next 6 weeks. They will not return until middle of March. March 13th, they're going to be off until. And word is they want to pursue this bill when the legislature returns. There's a whole gamut of things that happened between Monday and where we're at right now. So Monday night, I get tipped off by someone who's an extremely reliable source that I have within the Capitol, sent me an email, said, hey, check this out. Pro-life caucus is having a closed door meeting tomorrow, 4:01 in the main Capitol. That was Tuesday morning at 10:30 in the morning. That is the same day that Governor Wolf gave his budget address, right?
Yep.
So I get to this building, get to this room at 10 o'clock in the morning, right? And where is that in the Capitol? If you're familiar with the Capitol, right? You have the main rotunda, the floor, right? You have those stairs going up, and then you have the chambers on both sides, right? On that second level. So if you go towards the back end of that second level, there is a Lieutenant Governor's office, right? So, and there's a big, like, there's about like 20 feet between the Lieutenant Governor's office and say like the pillar, like the rails going down, like that arches around, mm-hmm. the walkway.
Sure.
And so I am like 20 feet above that. And you like, I'm watching people go into this room at 10 o'clock in the morning, but also I'm watching everyone get set up for the budget. Because 20 feet below me, right where I'm standing at that point in the Capitol, is going to be where the Senate gives its response, Senate leaders.
Right. And I think that's the whole context of why they wanted to do this meeting at this time, right? They knew that everyone in the media was going to be paying attention and getting set up for the budget. And so they could do this under the kind of shroud of darkness, so to speak.
Right. And also at the same time, you have journalists in press conferences. It's not just like governor gives his budget at 11:30 and that's it. Leading up to it, like 8 o'clock in the morning, you have all these different agencies, boom, 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 in succession, giving press conferences. Governor gives his address, and you go back to those state agencies, boom, 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 giving those how the budget's going to affect those agencies. Right. So people are just running around the Capitol, journalists, TV crews, trying to get interviews. I'm up there watching who's going into this thing. I know all these legislators by face, pretty much, after being here for 2 years now. And I see House Speaker Mike Terzai go into this closed door meeting, right? I had my camera out. I'm just up there, maybe pretend I'm taking pictures of the artwork up there. When some of them probably knew who I was because I was pointing my camera at them, taking pictures, especially one of the Democrats that went in there, who I knew who it was. And as soon as I see Mike Terzai go in there, I go, holy shit. I go down into the newsroom, right, on the second floor, and I see Roxbury walking by. I was like, yo, Roxbury, you won't believe this, right?
Now, we should say Roxbury is a guy. He runs he's got his Roxbury News Service out of Harrisburg, right? And he does a lot of kind of documentary stuff and kind of paying attention.
He's like the only other independent news source within the Capitol. And he actually has his own – he's actually been able to get membership within the PRLA. Or not the PRLA, the Legislative Correspondents Association.
Sorry, you go down there, you grab Roxbury.
I go into the newsroom, I tell him what happens, and a couple of other journalists look at me. Their heads perk up like, what? Are you serious? I'm like, yeah. I'm like, Speaker Terzai, I just went in the room 401, main rotunda. It's a pro-life caucus meeting, and they're talking about Senate Bill 3. Right? So Roxbury grabs his camera. I get my camera set up, get the microphone hooked up, get everything mounted on my camera. Go back up there, and within like 10 minutes of getting back up there, you just start seeing people leaving this room. So we have our cameras rolling, and we're asking everyone, oh, is this the pro-life caucus meeting? Is this the pro-life caucus meeting? And everyone was just like had like, oh, shit looks on their face. Like, how did these people find out what's going on? So then House Speaker Terzai walks out, and he kind of like tries to like skirt by. I was like, excuse me, Mr. Speaker, was this the pro-life caucus meeting? And he's like, yes, it was. And he kept on going. I was like, well, would you like to comment on the transparency of Senate Bill 3? And he runs off, and I'm like, well, how come you're not answering my questions? And then a couple minutes later, Kathy Rapp, the original author of House Bill 1948 from the previous session, walks out. Roxbury was able to grab her with a quick question. Oh, was this a public meeting on Senate Bill 3? And she's like, no, this was a caucus meeting with legislators. And may I interject here real quick? There were also a lot of lobbyists in there. who we did not know who they were. If you spend time in the Capitol, you pretty much know who all the lobbyists are, right? You know who all the staffers are. There's lobbyists and staff people, some sort of people in there who were not normal Capitol staffers or lobbyists within the caucus or within the local political world. So there's outsiders in there. And Kathy Rapp comes out, we interview her, and I ask her flat out, you know, how come there has not been a public meeting on Senate Bill 3? And she's like, well, I don't know. That's not our, I was like, well, okay, how come you didn't have a public meeting last time? She goes on to say, well, we're not going to change our hearts and minds and stuff. You know, legislators, so why waste our time? And then, so then I was asking her, did this bill come from National Right to Life Committee? And she flat out said no. When, if you look at the videos and statements she's made over the past year or so on this stuff, she explicitly explains that she's been looking, that the pro-life caucus has been looking at what other states have been doing with terms of a 20-week abortion ban. Mm-hmm. So we were able to get her on video for that and put that video up. Oh no, go ahead. So we put that video up online, and that pretty much, we catch them all off guard with being there.
Well, and I think that there's like the important thing about what you just laid out there is, well, several important things. Like, number one, it kind of indicates they are willing to move quickly on this, and they are strategizing and kind of doing their best to strategize outside of the limelight, away from any kind of public scrutiny whatsoever. The fact that it was surprising for them that somebody knew where they were is also quite telling. So that's number one. And when you first told me about this, what was going on, all I was taken back to Obama's election, right? Back in 2008, when on the day of his inauguration, you had Mitch McConnell and Frank Luntz and a whole bunch of other strategists kind of meet together and basically saying, how are we going to stop this presidency? How are we going to stop this agenda? Right now, again, I understand that the scale is a lot different here. Right. But still, it was the same kind of strategy, same kind of mentality that we're just going to push our agenda no matter what. So that was the first thing. The second thing is the fact that you got this tip and you got these folks on tape, right? And that you actually kind of were covering that while everyone else was paying attention to what was going on in the budget. Now, that's so critical to kind of, you know, let these people know that they cannot do this under the cover of darkness, that, you know, we need to have that kind of aggressive reporting where these folks are going to be held accountable for what they're doing, because their responses, and especially I urge everybody to get out there and watch that Sean's videos that he posted up there on our Facebook page, to check it out. And you can see that they're completely taken off guard. And I think that's really, really important about the importance of that kind of independent media voice there in the Capitol.
And also, like, not that they're caught off, they were caught off guard. Now, a couple more things, right? I got this story out there a year ago about where this bill came from. We talked about the lack of transparency with it the last time. We mentioned the lack of transparency with it this time. We mentioned that it's the same exact bill coming from the same exact Right to Life Committee a couple weeks ago when this was starting to move its way through the committee process. And then also, so you keep on, I kept on with that story for the past year going back to it. But also, that video was valuable, not just for us on our website. It was also valuable for a lot of other journalists within that newsroom who could not probably, they have editors to answer to. So they have to go to these budget hearings. They can't just break away from the budget hearing. And we told everyone in the newsroom, they kind of just like looked at us like, wow, this is going on right now. And I don't blame them for not being able to go to that and stake out that thing. I mean, it's the most important day of the year for your news outlet. It's the biggest media day of the year. And I'm sure if you told your editor that you were saying, hey, no, I'm not going to this press conference right now, I'm going to go outside there, your editor would probably be very pissed off at you for that.
Exactly. That's a great point. So, I mean, the idea is that, you know, there's very real constraints on some of these journalists that are there, because there's, you know, and as you've always said, there's some good folks that are out there that do some really excellent reporting, but they have other kinds of obligations. They don't have the flexibility to do the kind of stuff that you're doing. But I would also add that, you know, and this is the other point that you've been, that you followed up with in this article, is the videos and your coverage of, first of all, your coverage of this bill and the kind of videos that you're posting were not just valuable to other journalists, but they're valuable to people who are organizing against SB3, right? I mean, the fact is that, you know, not only was you able to shine a light on this for other journalists to use, but it gives further kind of, you know, raw materials and ammunition, if you will, to those folks who are actively organizing against it. And I'll have to say is that, you know, when you were kind of tracking down some of the, you know, the kind of key figures, right? Like who were the ones you were chasing after? I'm just basing the guy like
Terzai, the House Speaker. And then as protesters are chanting, stop SB3
right
on the Capitol steps, in the rotunda steps, actually, as everyone's giving their press conferences, Senator Cormann, the Senate president, walks by. I get my camera going and I start yelling, excuse me, Senator Cormann. And he turns around, looks at me. I was like, can you answer about the transparency of Senate Bill 3 and why it's being moved? And they kept on walking. And I followed them. I was like, excuse me, Senator, can you answer my question? And then I asked also his follow-up, how come you're not answering my questions in a very loud voice when they were only like a couple feet in front of me?
Right. And this is just a perspective that you don't get to see very often, right? You don't get to see, and the fact that you had so many people kind of chanting, you know, chanting in the rotunda, you could hear that in the background. You can see the kind of, you know, the legislators just kind of walking away from you.
And this caught them all off guard.
Exactly. And that's kind of the idea, right? And the idea is that, you know, they've got their plans and, you know, they should be accountable to us, right? They should not be in a position where they constantly get to set the agenda and set the terms for how they communicate to us. And I think, you know, we see that moving. And from what I understand, too, as well, is that, you know, these folks were organizing against SB3 and a whole bunch of other stuff. But SB3 in particular are not looking to go away now. Right. I mean, this is past the Senate. This is going to move forward.
And these are the Tuesday with Toomey folks that came in. So there's a base of 50 to 100 people in Harrisburg who come out every Tuesday morning. There's a base of activists in this city right now who are willing to go out in front of Senator Toomey's office and willing to go inside the Capitol and do stuff, right? These aren't like people coming from around the state. These are locals.
Right, exactly.
So you have locals now that are willing to do this stuff in the Capitol, which is excellent. And then another thing is there's going to be a fight to actually kill this bill coming up in March, right? The legislators wait for 6 weeks. I looked at the previous vote. There are 21 Democrats who voted for this bill. The last time it was around, they're still in office. Two are in the top three leadership positions within the Democratic House Party, the House Democratic Party.
Yep.
Representative Joe Markosik and Representative Michael Hannon. Markosik is the appropriations chair for the Democratic Party, which is one of the most powerful positions you can have within that party. And then Michael Hannon is the minority whip. He also voted for this bill. One of the things that we did, we put out a how-to guide on killing this bill, linked it up to the Indivisible Guide, which we're going to probably talk about later on what's been going on with that. But it's pretty much a playbook congressional staffers put together from observations of what the Tea Party did to Obama 2008, 2009, and then going into the 2010 midterms. We linked to that, and we also linked to every single Democrat who voted for this bill the last time around, and we're going to make sure we tell them that if you vote for this bill the second time around, there will be major repercussions for you. You will lose your job.
No, that's awesome. And I think that, you know, and if you look at, you know, again, I would encourage everybody to go check out Sean's article. Again, we'll link to this in the show notes. But the article is called So You Want to Stop SB3 from Becoming Law? Here's How We Do It. And there's direct links to all the kind of the Democratic leadership, right? The 19 House Democrats who voted for this bill previously. And there's direct links to all of them in terms of and their phone numbers and the kind of the background. This is because really important because Governor Wolf released a short video, I think just yesterday, basically saying that he will veto SB3. But that's good, right? Good. However, given the number of Democrats, right, the number of Democrats who have voted for this kind of legislation in the past, right, there might be the numbers to override his veto. And that's why this is so important to put pressure upon the Democrats as well as the Republicans.
Because if you get those 20 Democrats that vote against this, you get a unity vote against this bill. You get them to act like a minority fucking party, you know, instead of acting like a bunch of losers that they are. You know, they lost three straight elections. They continue losing House seats, and people like Markosik, Dermody, and Hannah keep on getting installed in the leadership. These people are a bunch of losers, and this is why they're losers, and we're going to tell them to stop losing and start acting like a minority party.
Because
if they all do that, if they all vote against this, that bill is dead. That there's no chance of a veto override on that bill.
Well, you know, and I think that some of the language around this is important, too, because they talk about themselves as a minority party, and you hear this kind of language. And increasingly, you see, you know, especially among some progressive legislators, especially at the nation, like the national level, less so here in Pennsylvania. But I think they should start taking up this language. Instead of talking about themselves as a minority party, they should talk about themselves as the opposition, right? Or the resistance party. That should be their mentality as they move forward. It's because look, they've squandered away, right, through a lack of organization and for a kind of dismissal of the bulk of people in this state and completely fumbling the ball on gerrymandering in 2010. All those things together have put them in a situation where they're not winning elections anytime soon unless they are building out the base, organizing in the base, and acting like, exactly as you said, acting like they've got a spine and acting like the opposition.
And one of the things that I've heard, these talks are already going on. The Tuesday with Toomey folks, who we've been following here over the past month now, it's a women-led movement. And a lot of the women within this movement are talking about getting more women elected in office.
Yep.
And you know what's you know what that means? There's going to be some primaries coming up in 2018. That's what that means. And those 20 white, old white men.
Yep.
Which is the words that local activists used, a bunch of old white men getting between me and my physician is offensive. You know,
these no, that's right. And I'll tell you
old,
this.
20 old white Democratic men voted for this bill, and that's who needs to either step aside or vote against it.
Well, I'll tell you, and to underscore that point, is just yesterday, I was going back and forth with this one woman who's considering a run for office, who's smart as all hell, who's got political savvy, has got the fighting spirit that you wouldn't believe. So I put her in touch with some really kind of awesome staffers who know the insider stuff and who are also committed to that kind of agenda. And I'm not the only one doing this, right? There's people connecting up, putting people who've been in it for in the game for a while, right? Women who have shown that they are they want to get more women elected, right? And then now women stepping forward and bringing these folks together so that they can put together a strategy. And it's exactly the scenario you talked about. Somebody who's looking to run in a district that has just been occupied by a lazy kind of old white Republican, right, who's never gets challenged by the Democrats because they don't do the work. So this is kind of really important work going forward, and we're going to be following this every step of the way. So let me say one thing quickly. We're going to get right up. We're going long here, coming up to a break. But the other thing that I want to say before we get to the break is that this is not only SB3 is going on in Harrisburg right now. Just yesterday too, as well. I believe it was yesterday. Senate Bill 166, the Paycheck Deception Bill, also passed the PA Senate. And for those of you who have not been paying attention to what paycheck deception is basically paycheck deception passing laws that does not allow people to have money taken out of their paychecks to go towards union political activity. Right. So for you pay your union dues and then say, for example, you say, hey, I want some money to be donated towards this particular fund. Now, legislation has just been passed in the Senate that is going to block government agencies from deducting union dues used in political activity from employees' paychecks. Right. And even though there were six Republicans joined all the Democrats in opposing 166, we even have some Republicans come over and say that, no, we're going to oppose this. But the majority of the Republican majority is so deep right now that that was not enough to defeat this bill. Right. Now, this is something that unions have been fighting for a long period of time. Right. And what they've basically been shouting from the rooftops is basically, look, this is an attempt, right, to limit unions' effectiveness, right? The effectiveness to kind of served basically to organize people, right, and to be, politically effective. And as a way of kind of underscoring that, like leading Democrat Senator Jay Costa, he proposed an amendment to the bill that basically said, okay, look, you want to do this? Then let's put similar provisions there that that regulate corporations in the state. Right. However, that was defeated on a party line vote. So in other words, right, we're going to regulate the union's ability to do this. But if you want to donate to the United Way, you want to donate to some sort of corporate fund or something like that, that's fine. We'll take money out for that stuff. Only unions, you can't do that. Right. And why? Because unions represent right now, other than the people that we're seeing in the street right now, represent the only organized power base on the left. right? And that's why we've seen such a vicious attack against unions in Wisconsin, right? In Ohio, in Indiana, in Michigan, right across the country, and right here in Pennsylvania. That's what they know. Those folks on the right know exactly what they're doing to try to kind of gut any kind of organized resistance to their agenda, right? So that's something that we're going to have to follow very, very closely. As far as I know, I was looking for, I haven't seen Wolf come out very, very strongly on one side or another on this one in the past. He has not supported this, and he's said pretty firmly that he will not support this. I don't know if the Senate will have, or if there's going to be the numbers overall to override any kind of veto if this does pass all the way through. But this is the kind of shot that's going to be shot right over the bow right now. This is passed. This is the agenda they're looking forward to, and they're looking forward to that right to work legislation the state, which will basically find a way to say, no, you know what? Unions, we're just going to gut any kind of funding that you have whatsoever. You're going to follow the Wisconsin model that was put in there by Governor Scott Walker, and we're going to bring that right to Pennsylvania to gut what power is left from the unions.
And this will be day one. If Scott Wagner's governor, this is day one.
Exactly. And this is not something he's hiding in a little pamphlet in his coat pocket. This is something he's got in blazing billboards and every freaking highway where his garbage trucks kind of are traveling, right? I mean, he said this is what he's going to do. So if you think that there's not a connection between what just happened with Senate Bill 166 and Scott Wagner's kind of right to work future, then we're going to lose big time. So this is something that we're going to have to keep a direct eye on. And I really encourage everybody, get on over to the Rick Smith Show, right? RickSmithShow.com. Rick is he is on this issue more than anyone else in this state. And I'll tell you, he's the guide. If you're looking for you want some background on this, you want to understand better what paycheck deception is about, you want to understand what right to work is about and what its origins are and what kind of resistance is going on, get on over to RickSmithShow.com and check that out. Because there is nothing more important than to be following this issue, because we've got a lot on our plate right now. Right. As much as there's insanity happening at the national level, there is insanity happening right here in PA. And yes, it's asking us to kind of shift our attention or pay attention to a whole lot. Right. Not just focus on the shiny thing over there. Right. Donald Trump's tweets, for example. Right. But to kind of look at what is happening to our country right now, not just in this kind of like national scale, but right here in our own backyards. Anyways, on that score, we're coming up to a break. We ran really, really long. I'm sorry about that, folks. But there's just a lot going on. So when we come back from the break, one of the things that we'll tie this up on the Pennsylvania end of stuff, we'll also kind of get into a little bit about some the white supremacist flyers that started, or white nationalist flyers, we should say, that started appearing on Kutztown University's campus and Penn State Berks and some other colleges and campuses around the country as part of an emboldened kind of alt-right movement that is now looking to kind of spread its agenda in Trumplandia. So we'll take a look at that before we get into the insane insanity that is our national politics. So we come back out of the break, we'll get into the insanity, we'll get into kind of what we can do about it and how we can move forward. This is Kevin Mahoney, editor and founder of Raging Chicken Press. We'll be back right after this.
I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in Two. On this day in labor history, the year was 1973. That was the day the worst industrial disaster in Staten Island took place. Staten Island housed the world's largest liquefied natural gas storage tank. The Texas Eastern Transmission Corporation owned the tank and operated a pipeline system that stretched from Texas to the East Coast. The tank measured 272 feet across and was as tall as an 11-story building. When leaks were suspected, the company had the tank emptied and shut down. Workers had been repairing the torn Mylar insulation in the tank's liner for months. But then, vapors released during the repair process ignited the lining. This created extreme temperature and caused the pressure to rise, which resulted in an explosion inside the tank. The entire 6-inch thick concrete dome covering the tank immediately crumbled and rained down on the workers inside. 40 workers and 3 safety inspectors were inside at the time. None of them survived. The explosion caused a massive crater. Smoke billowed out for over 5 hours. Investigations revealed that nitrogen, Freon 11, and oxygen, and not liquefied gas, fueled the explosion. The cause was never determined. Some 25 years later, the New York Planning Board began reevaluating a moratorium on liquefied natural gas facilities in place since 1978. They concluded that government regulations and industry operating practices now in place would prevent a replication of this accident. The fire involved combustible construction materials and a tank design that are now prohibited. Although the exact causes may never be known, it is certain that liquefied natural gas was not involved in the accident, and the surrounding areas outside the facilities were not exposed to risk.
Welcome back to Raging Chicken Radio's Out the Coop podcast. So, folks, it is crazy time, right across the board. As we, Sean and I were talking about in that first session, what's going on here in Pennsylvania is pretty crazy in its own right. But it only mirrors a national trend, in the kind of the right of the Republican Party. And you know, right now, we see at the national level, we've got this new kind of alt-right movement, this emboldened kind of neo-fascist white nationalist movement, is, you know, occupying our White House. I mean, you got Bannon, Steve Bannon, who's, you know, the champion of the alt-right, who's right there is Trump's number one advisor. Jeff Sessions was just confirmed for Attorney General with a long history of kind of racist policies. And, you know, it's deep. It's really, really deep. I mean, Trump himself is, you know, not exactly a pleasant person when it comes to race and immigration and so on. But, you know, this has kind of come home recently right here in Berks County, PA. Kutztown University, the other night, basically what happened is that you had an organization that was going around and putting recruitment posters up, this kind of white nationalist organization called Identity Europa. And they're, you know, posting recruiting posters. And, you know, they say everything from, you know, protect your own or protect your heritage. They have other ones that are kind of say our future belongs to us. You know, it's all this kind of Roman statue figures of kind of white nationalism and so on. And they got posted around Kutztown University's campus. Kind of wrote the story on this to kind of expose some of the agendas of this group and did some background research on this organization. And this is their agenda. They are much more savvy. This is kind of like characteristic of this kind of alt-right movement, this neo-fascist movement. They are much more savvy when it comes in terms of their public relations campaign. They're less likely to don sheets and burn torches and crosses on people's front yards. What they're more interested in doing is looking super hip and trying to get other college students now to kind of join their ranks. So they had a national campaign that was, you know, called Project Siege, which was posting these these posters all on college campuses around the country. And in Berks County, PA, where Kutztown University is, where Penn State Berks is, and Berks County, PA has had issues with kind of white nationalist and racist organizations in the past. Just about a half an hour from Kutztown University's campus, there is an active KKK chapter in Bally, PA. The Southern Poverty Law Center active reports on hate groups, emergence of hate groups every single year. And Pennsylvania is ranked fifth in the nation in the number of hate groups. So, you know, it touches home. Now, there's people out there that, you know, think we should just ignore these folks. But I look at that and I say, you know, we just haven't learned the lesson from this past election then. People have said that if you just kind of put your blinders on and ignore this kind of like extremist fascist movement, that somehow they're just going to go away. That if they don't get the attention they want, then they'll pout and go home. Well, we've seen the exact opposite happen. So students and faculty members at Kutztown University and Berks and so on have been some organizing and thinking about strategies about kind of responding. And I think a lot of the organizing around this is very, very smart. It's smart and it's been informed by the Women's March, right? And some of the organizing that's come out of the Women's March and some of these indivisible groups, right? Where the response is not to, I'm going to go after this organization and I'm going to talk about how bad they are, but they're thinking about it instead about, how is it that we want to define our spaces and our campuses, right? How do we kind of have a community of solidarity that will not allow hate to take root on our campuses? So that's incredible in terms of some of the responses that that are coming out there. But so, you know, we got to watch this stuff, and we will watch this stuff. We're not going to turn a blind eye as our communities see kind of increases in this kind of neo-fascist discourse, this neo-fascist organization. And, you know, we're not going to allow a climate of fear to take hold. So that's really important, especially in this kind of this Trumplandia world that is built on kind of instilling fear into communities. And the good news is, once again, that people are standing up and saying, we're not going to have that.
So one of the things here, two things. That I was at the immigration rally a couple weeks ago in Lancaster. And one of the speakers was AJ Marin. We know AJ from the Raging Chicken, his work with the SEIU as an organizer out here in Harrisburg. Yep. And now he's also doing organizing work, organizing immigrant communities in the Lehigh Valley, in Hazleton, in your like cities that's like that north, not northeastern part, but between the Lehigh Valley and northeastern PA. He's organizing people in those, organizing immigrant communities in that thing, in that community. And one of the things he brought up at the immigration protest a couple weeks ago was, what would have happened if we responded the way we're responding now? Like, not we, like, as Americans, but we collectively as the left. What would happen if the left responded like this back in 1930 Germany, when the Nazi Party was coming and the fascists were coming up, you know, in this type of manner? Would fascism have taken root in Europe if people stood up to it and said, no, this stops here, instead of turning a blind eye to it and saying, oh, well, everything will be fine, because, you know, if you're right about them, you're going to give them credence, and then they'll all just go away. Like, that's the type of, like, hearing that rhetoric saying, if you say nothing, they'll just go away. They'll just burn themselves out, is the same exact mistakes that people made in 1920, 1930 Germany. Absolutely. Right? You look at the newspapers, they're dismissing them as a bunch of, like, restless youth. You know, foolishness, they're foolish, they're restless youth, they don't know what they're doing. You know, and who are doing this? Young people with hip haircuts, you know, trying to, like, be in the in crowd today with my generation, you know, millennials. These are, and you're like, well, if they just go away, if you just leave them be, they'll go away and they'll burn themselves out. No, that was said back in the newspapers in Germany said that in the 1920s, and what happened? The Third Reich took over, what, three quarters or half of the country's newspapers?
That's right. You know, and it's like, and look, you don't even need to go back to the 1930s for this, right? I mean, you can go back to this last presidential campaign, right? I mean, the idea that the stuff that's coming out of Trump's mouth, that's outrageous, right? We just need to, you know, they're going low, we're going high. You know, that whole Obama kind of narrative. And, you know, we're going to ignore this. We're going to stay above the fray. We're not going to get too worked up about this. You know, they're just going to go away. They're going to burn themselves out. And look where we are now. Right. Look where we are now. And you're absolutely right. I mean, some of the writing that has been coming out, doing some of the comparisons between the rise, you know, when you look at Weimar Germany and the rise of fascism in Europe during the 1930s, it's eerily similar to what's going on.
Not even the writing has been coming out. The writing that has been out for the past 10 or 15 years now, if you read any Chris Hedges book between 2002 and 2014, you know, when his latest books, I think he's mentioned Weimar Germany in just about every single book he's written. You know, the people say Chris Hedges is an alarmist. He doesn't know what he's talking about. Well, guess what? He's been talking about this stuff since writing about this stuff in his book since 2002.
No, and
if there's one person... If there's one person in the world who's correct about this, it's Chris Hedges.
No, and it's unfortunate that, like, this is the pattern that happens, right? You have these folks that they're first dismissed as kind of like, oh, he's like, just you said, like, he's an alarmist, oh, he's conspiratorial, this is a kind of extreme. But if you go back and read Hedges now, right, it reads like a playbook of what's about to happen. I mean, and this is, you know, people don't want to believe, and I get it. Look, I get it. People don't want to believe that things can go this bad. People don't want to believe that a coup could happen in the U.S. People don't want to believe that we're going to find the new brown shirts right here in this country, and this is going to be the new front of fascism. You know, people don't want to believe that, right? And because of many people's lives, they're just paying attention to what's happening in their neighborhoods and their communities, right? They don't want to think about this other stuff. They just think it's all crazy until it's too late. That's the lesson of the history. That's the lesson of following these patterns about why we have to pay attention to this stuff, because it happens like that. It happens slowly. It's not like you're just going to find, like, Hitler is going to, you know, pop out of a sewer and like, boom, fascism. That's not how it works, right? This is not teenage mutant ninja Nazis, right? This is actually the way the stuff happens historically. And if we do not stop every single advance of this stuff, then we lose. And this is why, you know, people talking about the strategy about what the Democrats should be doing on the nationwide level to all these confirmation hearings that are happening, right? All the confirmation hearings, there should not be a Democrat. We said this last week too as well. There should not be a single Democrat in the Senate that votes for any of Trump's nominations, right? I don't care how well qualified, quote unquote, these people are. The norms have been shattered. Right. If I'm well qualified, but the result of me, say, for example, getting on the Supreme Court is going to be the destructions of unions nationwide. Right. Or is going to be the elimination of Roe v. Wade, or is going to be like a further destruction of our public sphere. Guess what? Right. No, you just say no. It's not about the CV. It's about the practices. It's about the politics. And it's about what is going to happen to this country if we allow this stuff to go through.
And one of the things, like, one of the liberals on my Facebook page from the Bucks, Montgomery County area, someone who I've met a few times, I don't want to name any names, just because I don't, we're in a community where people know who everyone is, like, you know what I mean? But the person said that, the Democrats, you know, they should give Neil Gorsuch his Supreme Court seat, and they should pick their battles wisely. No. Okay, I was in that mode. You know, we should pick our fights and see where we go. No, we are in all-out war. We block everything.
Thank you. We fight everything.
We fight everything tooth and nail. Even if we're going to lose, we fight it so we can go back and we can organize around it. And get
No. But I'll give you save it more than that. We are going to lose those individual battles.
Yeah.
Right? That's the point. The point is, like, picking your battles wisely doesn't even make sense in this context.
You're going to lose every battle, so why not lose every battle and fight?
Exactly. The whole point, I mean, like, it baffles my mind. You look at what's these confirmation hearings, right? Is that the Betsy DeVos hearing, right? Her confirmation, it was historic. It was the first time ever that the vice president has had to come in and break a tie in a cabinet nomination confirmation hearing, right? That's
crazy. When they had the majority party.
When they, yes. When they had the majority party, yes. So,
it might be the first time ever, but just throw that out there. They also had the majority party in the Senate too that they had to break the tie with.
Right, and this is so critical, right? This is absolutely critical that this just took place, because that is effective resistance, right? It's true they still lost, right? The Democrats do not have the numbers in order to kind of defeat this, right? And then there's no one else to stop it, right? Unless you're going to have, you know, Trump is going to kind of, you know, I don't know, lose his mind and start vetoing things like this. Of course he's not going to do that, right? That's just crazy thinking. We're going to lose. The left is going to lose. Democrats are going to lose these kind of nomination fights, right? So that's how the table is set, right? That's what's happened because of the work that has not happened over the past 10 years. Now that's where we are, right? The only thing left is to say no and is to build resistance. This whole idea that we should be kind of like being rational and kind of weighing things one way or another does not function, right, in a system where one side is trying to uphold norms and the other side doesn't give a shit about that. They're about raw power. So why on earth would you lend any legitimacy to this presidency, especially after the Hillary Clinton campaign and all those folks in the Democratic Party who were campaigning during the election talked about Donald Trump as a singular threat to American democracy? Well, then if you believe that and that was the main part of your campaign, guess what you need to do? You need to act like that is true.
Start acting like it.
Exactly. I mean, you know, and again, look what Mitch McConnell did to Elizabeth Warren this past week, right, is a perfect example of that. They are willing to pull out rules and use them to their own advantage. There is no consistency in how they've ever applied these things before. And Mitch McConnell himself has said things on the Senate floor about Barack Obama and some other senators that could have invoked Rule 19 or whatever to kind of censure them. And then not on top of that, you want to talk about the misogyny of all that. After Elizabeth Warren is censured, by four senators, male Democratic senators, go on to continue to read Coretta Scott King's letter, right? And there's no problem there, right? So Elizabeth Warren became a target. They wanted to push her down, so they did that. I mean, this is the context that we're in, folks, and that's, we got to get our heads around that, because everything else is trying to lull us into our little sleep where we're going to go back to the way things are because, oh, it's going to be okay. It is not going to be okay unless we stand up and fight back.
One of the things that you could say, one of the positive things that might have come out of this, right, this you could build off of with these confirmation hearings is the Democrats have been able to delay and stall these confirmation votes longer than any other previous administration in the history of the United States.
Yes.
And you know what that's done? That's given people time to regroup. It's given time people to rally. And it's given time for people to fight back on things when they go in their legislative break. It stalls Donald Trump's first 100 days in office.
That's
It pushes that back. You know, and people were like, oh, we'll just let them fly on through. No, you fight, you stall, and you every day without a legislative day in that Senate chamber is a victory because they have to still do those. They still have to go through with the confirmation hearings. They can't push policy. They delayed the policy so long now where people are so pissed off about things with the executive orders, with the repeal of Obamacare. You know, now people are entered. This is giving your base time to reload, regroup, and fight in the streets.
Absolutely. And look, and part one of the strategies of the Trump organization has been to basically open the fire hose, right, since on day one, right? They did this in terms of how they scheduled their confirmation hearings. They did this with the executive orders, right? And why would you do that? Well, because it's also, if you just put your craziness on full blast, right? The media itself, right? From some of the established media, you know, journalists that are doing really kind of bang up good work, right? They're absolutely overwhelmed. Things are moving so quickly and so fast that you cannot even catch up. And then people reading about it, right? They might read it, but they don't even have time to digest what's going on because it's on to the next thing, on to the next thing, on to the next thing. Oh, and then there's a Donald Trump out there tweeting. So people are distracted. The slowing down of the process and the confirmation hearings also gives people the opportunity to dig in, gives these journalists an opportunity to dig in, and gives people time to kind of think through what's actually going on. That is absolutely important. Is it going to stop the confirmation of anybody? No. And we saw this with Betsy DeVos this week. We saw this with Jeff Sessions, the freaking racist, right? Is now our attorney general, right? That guy, right? He gets through, right? And not enough Democrats fought on that, I have to say.
Joe Manchin fucking votes for him.
Yeah. I mean, it's like, you know, this is, you know, this again, there's your target, folks, right? You know, there's the guy who should be primaried out of office. I mean, if you ask me. So you've got that. And then Tom Price just last night, you know, Tom Price was confirmed in the middle of the night last night. Right. So you think about how that looks. Right. Tom Price is going to, you know, he's the guy who's going to be kind of in charge of basically dismantling Obamacare. Dismantling the Affordable Care Act, right? He is now confirmed to be the Secretary of Health and Human Services. Right? The Democrats were on there for 30 hours delaying that. So by the time they were able to kind of finish talking, it was 2 a.m. last night, right? And so they have to pass a vote. They vote for him to confirmation in the middle of the night, right? That's important. Think about that image, right? In the middle of the night, they're going to try to squeeze this guy through, the guy who's going to rip apart medical care.
That's just as bad as having a closed door meeting four floors above everyone else in the Capitol while all the journalists and TV crews are getting ready for the budget.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
These are the type of things that people need to expose. People need to get out there. Also, while we were on our break, Betsy DeVos tried to go to our first public school ever first time she ever stepped foot in a public school. And guess what happened? Activists blocked her physically, stood in front of the doors of that school and made her go back into her car and go back to her office. You know, like that's the type of stuff. Those are going to, those right there, those are the people who are leading the fight in the Senate. Those are the people who are going to be leading the fight in the House, because that's sending a message to our legislators saying, no, this shit's not going to stand regardless.
No, that's absolutely right. And, you know, and I think, you know, again, the lesson here is pressure works. Like pressure works, and pressure is the only thing that's going to get us to that next stage. You know, you listen, if you listen very carefully to Chuck Schumer, right? He's the, you know, the minority head of the Senate, a Democrat. You listen to Chuck Schumer, right? Chuck Schumer very much wants to kind of don the mantle of, you know, progressivism and kind of resistance and things like this. But every once in a while, he slips back. He slips back to say, okay, maybe I could start. Now I've done my little resistance things. Maybe I could start making deals and stuff. No. We have to have constant pressure on this guy's back to say, no. If you're going to resist and you're going to continue to resist, otherwise you're next. Right? That's the mentality that we have to be in at this point. Because look, I mean, if you look at just this week, Jeff Sessions, right? He's gonna virtually gut what happens with the gains that were made under Obama in terms of like policing and criminal justice and that kind of stuff. Betsy DeVos, right? Who wants to hand over public funds for religious schools, right? Using public education only to her means public money going to private schools and for-profit entities. Now you got Tom Price, Health and Human Services is going to gut health insurance. You've already got executive orders this week that are going out and basically looking to shut down the EPA, looking to shut down the one body that governs the kind of quality and safety of our elections to ensure that they're not hacked. You got one thing after another is about destroying any kind of aspect of government that is supposed to be looking out for us. So, and that's what we got to keep on saying in our heads as we kind of move forward. When anything starts, is this too extreme? Well, no, that's extreme. What's going on in D.C.? What's our response going to be? Right. So, I mean, you know, it's just nonstop. And if you have any, you know, question in your mind, are they going to come around to this? I mean, look at what I'll give you two examples of things that just took place this week that are just kind of reminders of where these people's heads are at. Right. And what and the folks on the right, what they're willing to do in order to force this agenda. So you've got like, you know, I don't know if people saw this, like Melania Trump. Right. There was this just blew my mind. This, you know, she's filing lawsuits because she's, you know, said her character has been defamed by, you know, this news organization, blah, blah, blah. And in the suit filed against that, and they're saying, well, what's the damages that are caused by, you know, someone that repeated, you know, someone basically said that she served as a prostitute for a short time and back in Slovenia, right? And there's no evidence to that, and the paper retracted it. So but she's saying it was damaged her character. Why does that matter? Because she says, and like in the court filings, it says that, well, because that kind of defamation of character is going to cost her money, because she plans on marketing all this stuff. This is a once in a lifetime opportunity for her to be, as she's a first lady, right, to have like that kind of exposure for all her clothing and her jewelry and things like this, right? And that those profits are going to be taken away from her now because her character is defamed, right? And they're not trying to hide this. This is in the court filings, right? That she wants to make money off of being first lady in there. So there's number one. And then number two, the other part of it is like, look at what the right wing is going to do. I mean, when was the last time that you saw a public campaign, right, with ads going and all this kind of stuff for Supreme Court justice nomination? There's an organization out there, but it's called Judicial Crisis Network, right? They just have a $2 million ad buy, right, and are running ads on TV, right, in support of Neil Gorsuch, on the Trump's nomination for the Supreme Court, right? And they've got this woman, Jane Nitza, I think is her name, Jane Nitza, who was an attorney under Obama, saying, I don't understand why the left is upset about this stuff. They shouldn't be worried. He's a great guy. This right-wing kind of nut job legal organization that comes out of the Federal Society and all sorts of that stuff, they got $2 million behind this and they're kind of key ad buys. The only reason I knew about this, I saw a little ad about, you know, I saw a little some reporting on this, but I was watching the news last night, right? MSNBC, right? Watching the news last night on MSNBC, and there it was. There was the ad come out. I was like, holy crap. Right. This is what they're going to go. They're launching full offensive. They've got billions of dollars to burn to strip our democracy away. And this is what they're doing. They don't care. They're out for their own enrichment, and they're willing to put tons of money behind getting their agenda pushed before. This is not a good situation.
No, It's not. It's
I'm telling you.
Got it off your chest?
Yeah. It's been sitting there for a bit. You know what I mean? I mean, it's just
and one of the things that I would like to add to this, right?
Yeah.
This is what despots do, right?
That's right.
You know, like, name me a despot who's never tried to profit off of themselves, enrich themselves or their family, being in office in some fucking banana republic, right? Like, name me a despot who hasn't tried to do it. You could go back to Somoza, Saddam Hussein, you know, at Uday and Hussein, you know, the sons, right. Like Zimbabwe, you know, going, like, name me a despot who hasn't tried to enrich themselves while they were in office through a repressive dictatorship.
No, exactly. I mean, that's exactly it. This is the pattern. And I don't think we should, like, shy away from the fact that there's a pattern. You know what I mean?
And I, like, my mom, it's my mom's like, you know, I think my mom's finally coming around. She was like, you know, let's give him a chance type of thing. So, like, wow, there's a lot of people upset and angry about this. And I try to explain to her, I'm like, this is like, what we're following here is like, we're marching ourselves towards a constitutional crisis. You have a president that's attacking federal judges, calling them illegitimate, going after the media, calling them fake media, calling someone like the New York Times fake press, you know. What was that term? Lugenpresse?
Lugenpresse. Lugenpresse. Yeah.
The lying press. Lugenpresse. You know, yeah. like these, they are already walled off in their own bubble. The Alex Joneses, the Rush Limbaughs of the world, the Breitbarts, they already have their own bubble. Now you have more ammunition for them calling them fake press, you know, the lying press and stuff like this. Like, that's very dangerous rhetoric that's going on right here.
Well, it's not just rhetoric. I mean, look at this. I mean, there's this guy. I don't know if you saw this week, but this is like Sebastian Gorka. Did you see this guy?
I have not.
Okay, Sebastian Gorka is the deputy assistant to President Trump, right? I'm sorry, I should not use that word. I mean, I meant to say shit givens. is a deputy assistant to Trump, okay? Now, he is a former Breitbart editor, right? Just like Steve Bannon, right? Put those two things there. And this is what he said. He said in an interview with CNN, right, that the administration is going to continue to use the term fake news until the media understands that their monumental desire to attack the president is wrong. Okay? And it's a remarkable interview. So basically what they're saying, right, is that, look, we are going to call you the lying press. We are going to call you fake news. We are going to treat you that way. We're going to dismiss your concerns. We're going to call you crazy, right, until you get with the program, right? And, you know, again, and I think that, you know, like CNN has been good on this, I have to say so far. They've been willing to push back a little bit on this. But how long will that stay, right? I'm just waiting for some of the corporate owners of some of these companies to say, you know what, maybe let's get on board with the let's get on the board with Trump, right? Let's get on the board with this, so, you know, we don't have this back and forth all the time. Let CNN take the heat, but we're going to get on board. That's a dangerous situation. They're basically saying that we are going to control our message. We don't care about the media. We are going to destroy the media. We're going to attack the media. Any chance that we get, we're going to call you fake, and that's how we're going to get. And we've got our own machine. Just like you said, we've got our own right-wing media bubble that's out there, and we're going to mobilize and fan the flames of like, you know, Trump hysteria to attack you folks. This is bad.
No, and you're going to rile up a bunch of people by using this term fake press. You're doing stuff that has never been done in this country before. It is very, very, very troubling. Like, what happens if our media institution collapses,
right?
And it's nothing but like Alex Jones of the world running things. Like, what's going to happen when that goes down?
That's exactly, because you look at it right now, it's like what we're able to do here at Raging Chicken Press,
like,
right?
Go
ahead, sorry.
Like, when those institutions fall, that's when we fall into that's when we start death spiraling into a fascist regime.
That's absolutely right. And you look at what we're able to do here at Raging Chicken press, right? And kind of like independent media across the country, right? Independent progressive media across the country. You know, as much as we can, you know, get aggressive, we can be adversarial and that kind of stuff. We are still in that broader media landscape, right? It's like where the resources are in our kind of traditional journalist stuff, the New York Times, the LA Times, all this kind of stuff, and some of the broadcast media too as well. We need those people. Right. If anything, like we as Raging Chicken independent media can help push the agenda and stuff, like bring things to the fore for that kind of, for those resources to be applied. If those go away, everything goes away. Right. Also with, you know, with the proposals of about, you know, against net neutrality. Right. That seem to be kind of moving forward to as well. There's another way for them to control the levers of the media, right? To determine, you know, what kind of, you know, which media is going to get the fast lane and which media is going to get slowed down. It's going to have that little loading logo that's going to be coming up on your screen. Right? That's coming forward too as well. And if you remember, we reported a couple of weeks back about what's happening with, you know, I'm just forgetting the name of it now, but what's happening with kind of like, I want to keep on call it Air America, but it's not Air America, but it's a, you know, it's the U.S. kind of international kind of radio, right? Where, you know, Trump has basically put his political operatives in charge of that. So we're going to get like a government sponsored Trump media. I mean, this is not good, folks. And, you know, we have to, you know, keep our eye on the prize and like not forget that this is real. And it's not just something that's getting made up on the side. Otherwise, it's all going to be fake news, and we just got to go to the president for what's true, says Lamar Smith, whoever his name is. I want to, you know, anyways, I got to stop because I can't stand anymore, Sean. I can't stand anymore, right? I just can't stand. No, it's not, but I got to stop. We are coming up to a break, and when we come back, we're just gonna try to tie things up a little bit for today. We're gonna look forward to next week. Next week's a big week here in Raging Chicken and in Pennsylvania for progressives. We'll talk a little bit about that, and maybe we'll have some recommendations for how to calm down and relax. All right, we'll come back right after this. This is Kevin Mahoney, editor and founder of Raging Chicken. We'll be back right after this.
This is Kevin Mahoney, editor and founder of Raging Chicken Press. Over the past 5 years, we've brought unapologetic progressive activist media to Pennsylvania and beyond. We've helped hold those in power accountable and shine a light on some amazing activist work. We've broken national stories and established a reputation as an aggressive citizen media site. As newsrooms close and traditional journalists lose their jobs, hard-hitting investigative news suffers. If we care about our democracy, we have to find new sustainable models of journalism, and frankly, no one's going to do it for us. So take a minute to become a member of Raging Chicken Press. For as little as $5 a month, the price of a good beer or a cup of coffee, you will be supporting homegrown progressive journalists and media activists. Go to RagingChickenPress.org and click on the Support and Membership tab to become a member. Leave a one-time donation or learn about other ways you can help. We don't have billionaire backers. Keeping progressive activist media going strong depends on you. Thank you for all your help and support, and keep up the fight.
Welcome back to Raging Chicken Radio's Out the Coop podcast. Well, we are wrapping up our coverage of yet another insane week in Trumplandia, and following what is happening right here in Pennsylvania. So, you know, the silver lining, if you're going to have to use a cliche, the silver lining of our condition right now is that there's amazing work that's going on, amazing organizing that's going on in so many different levels. And that is phenomenal. So next week, Friday and Saturday of next week, is the PA Progressive Summit, or the Keystone Progress Summit, in Harrisburg, PA. That is at the Hilton in downtown Harrisburg. And it's going to be a place, you know, we were there every single year. This year, we're going to have not all of our writers, but a good chunk of our writers are going to be out there with us. We've got a separate table. We're going to be there with Rick Smith. Big week for the Rick Smith Show next week. Next Saturday, that is the 18th. That is the Saturday of the summit. The Rick Smith Show will be launching its first episode on Free Speech TV. So in addition to its daily radio show out of Harrisburg, Rick is going national. That's going to be happening next Saturday. We hope to be there to celebrate a little bit with him next Saturday. Friday night, take a look. Keep your eyes on our Facebook page, because Friday night that we're looking to put together a meetup. So we have our writers and our contributors and members and just fans and those who have been supporting us over the years. We can kind of get together, have pizzas and beer, that kind of stuff. So look out for that on our Facebook page. We'll have the event announcement out there pretty soon. Right. But most importantly, this is an opportunity for progressives really to kind of recharge and kind of reconnect after a year. And what I think I'm looking forward to most about this year's summit is that the organizing has just been amazing around the state. And so instead of it being a place where people get together to begin to network, what I think is going to happen at this year's summit is that the organizing is just going to kind of expand even further. So I'm really looking forward to that.
And that's one of the things I got to say is being out here in Harrisburg the past couple of years, I've gotten to meet like, I wouldn't say every organizer in the state, but I've gotten to get a hold of a lot of awesome organizers that I know from Pittsburgh, Lancaster, Harrisburg, Philadelphia, Northeastern PA, Erie PA. And it's one of the things where people come out to Harrisburg, they're asking us for help, logistics and, you know, how right. to do stuff out here. And it's, I think this is going to be another step for us to become the resistance media in Pennsylvania. You know, they're calling this the Resistance Summit. I think we're going to be we are the resistance media right now. And it's awesome having people like Lou out in Pittsburgh, you and Seth that can go to stuff in the Lehigh Valley or in Philadelphia and do things on a more consistent basis. We're getting our face out there. Every year we've been out there, it's just the two of us, or it's going to be like four or five of us out there now.
Yep.
And we're going to be able to really get in contact with people who we haven't seen for a while. And also looking forward to meeting people who have never been involved in politics before. One of the awesome things with the Tuesday with Toomey's crowd is I run into a lot of my customers there, right? A lot of people who come into the Capitol for the Tuesday with Toomey stuff were out to these rallies saying, I know you from somewhere. I'm like, yeah, I'm your, you know, I pour you your beer. I'm your bartender, you know, and they're like, it's an awesome feeling running into that. Yeah. I've had to be like the past 3 or 4 weeks now. And these are people who never got involved in politics before the election. These are people who, you know, were just your regular Democratic voters or people who are apolitical, and now they're involved because things are going. And it's going to be awesome seeing not only the people who've been out there year after year, but also the new faces that are coming into this movement. You know, one of the things that is like really typical of the Democratic Party around the state, it's just a bunch of not old white people, but it's a bunch of older people, older folks who have been around in since the 60s doing this activism stuff. And there's not a lot of younger blood in there, not a lot of middle-aged or younger people in there. And it's, you know, going out to these rallies, it's not just the older folks that are doing this. There's also a lot of younger people that are now getting involved. So it's going to be awesome. Finally, hopefully the Progressive Summit, it's going to be a lot more youthful than the previous few years.
Yeah, and I think it will be. And I think that's, one of the points on your about resistance media, it's like, you know, one of the things that we've been, you know, working on for, you know, really since we started Raging Chicken is to expand what we're doing here at Raging Chicken, right? To work from our vantage point to, you know, be that resistance media, right? But we've also been, you know, consistently networking with other folks that are doing this kind of work, right? This is why we've had such a long-term relationship with the Rick Smith Show, is because we see how we really need to be thinking about this is not just like a several little isolated kind of media projects out there that are kind of going off in their own directions and in competition with one another, but how do we begin to network our efforts? And I think that, you know, this, in my mind, is going to be one of, you know, one of my agendas for the summit is going to be to kind of, you know, put together even more lists of people that are doing this work to look at how we can network even more effectively. So that's really good. I don't know if I told you this too as well, but Matt Murray out in New Hampshire Labor News, he's been in touch this week about some possible connections with some new writers looking for ways of kind of networking the work that we're doing at Raging Chicken, they're doing out there in New Hampshire. So that's really good. That's like really good news that, you know, we see that kind of expanding. And so I've got another kind of cool announcement that some people, this is starting to get some traction out there. Raging Chicken Press has been working with some folks down by Philadelphia. And as they were launching a new organization, which they just launched this this past week, called Philadelphia Progressives. You can go check them out at www.phillyprogressives.com. And one of the things that you'll notice if you go right to their webpage is right up on the top right-hand corner, right, you're going to find out that you're going to see a little place where you can click to listen to our podcast, right? Because we're kind of partnership with them. Philadelphia Progressives, it's a really cool organization because they're not simply starting to start from scratch and start all over again and start a build a complete new organization, right? Their idea is that, look, there's already awesome work going on, right? But what we don't often know about or a way of kind of, we don't have a way of consolidating is having kind of a way to look at all the stuff that's going on and begin kind of networking folks across the region. So part of what is happening with Philadelphia Progressives is that we're seeing basic things like, you know, a progressive calendar, like events that are coming up that you can follow with locations, different organizations. So instead of having kind of multiple competing events on one particular day, because I don't know that what that person's doing, they don't know what I'm doing, have a way to begin to start coordinating our efforts, right, in a much more strategic and kind of conscious way. So that's an awesome. So and next week, I'm going to be talking to the folks for Philadelphia Progressives. We're going to have a special episode of the podcast, bring out the sit down once again and talk about these folks about what they're doing. So, you know, look forward to that too as well.
Yeah, I can't wait. We have a lot of things ahead of us. It's finally, the years of doing this ourselves, me and you, the two of us, has finally been paying off. And we're just by looking at the way we're doing over the past couple months, you know, bringing on new writers, you know, it seems like we're starting to get back into that groove of getting content out there where it's not just reliant on the two of us. And once again, we're starting to hit those numbers we used to be hit a couple years ago before we got bogged down with all this work and the AppScuff stuff and me moving out into Harrisburg. And
exactly,
you know, we're getting back to where we were a couple years ago. And you know, it's great seeing, it's great seeing this finally going forward and growing.
Yeah. You know, it's like, you know, and this is, you know, I'll go back to, you know, what Rick Smith has always said to me. I'll never forget the day that we're out in a big rally of the Capitol and Rick was out there talking to folks about his show, passing up some flyers and things. And he and I were just kind of talking right on the kind of, you know, right on the corner outside the Capitol building. And, you know, one of the things he said is, you know, about the importance of staying in the room. Right. The idea that, you know, a lot of the work of organizing, a lot of the work of doing, you know, the kind of stuff that he's doing, the kind of stuff that we want to do is about, you know, sticking through it. Right. And kind of doing that long slog of the dailiness of the work. And eventually, like, it pays off. And I think that's kind of where we're at this point is that we're seeing, you know, and, you know, frankly, I wish this wasn't the context in which would pay off. Right. But I think it's the kind of thing that people are starting to realize that this kind of media is absolutely critical. If we're actually going to build a movement, it's not the only thing. Right. And we'd be clear about that is the organizing is kind of first and foremost. But we need voices out there. They're going to report on our efforts and what we're doing. So, you know, I couldn't be more thrilled. And, you know, I hope that those folks that are out there with Keystone Progress will stop by. We're going to have some, I've got lots of buttons. One of the kind of investments of this past year was to buy a button maker. So we've got a bunch of buttons that we'll be having there. We're going to ask folks, you know, kick in like a buck or two donation, right, for that to help us kind of, you know, keep our funds coming in. Got some Raging Chicken ones. We got some alternative facts or lies ones. And we got the Richard Spencer Group, Richard Spencer Project buttons with the big fist in them. Again, check out the link down below for our Teespring shirts to check out that graphic. Maybe I'll even embed the graphic directly into the show notes today. So, I don't know. There's a lot going on. There's a lot to be hopeful about. But, you know, there's a lot to be just, you know, keeping our energy in a consistent fashion, to make sure that what we're doing is sustainable, to make sure that we're not just, you know, going to have a bunch of people, a few people that are going to burn out, but that we're actually, we're going to kind of invest in our infrastructures in order to kind of, you know, protect our futures. So I don't know how else to put it, but so any kind of, I don't know, closing thoughts for the day, Sean?
One of the things, like, we're going to be struggling. Next 4 years are going to be a struggle. But that struggle is going to be building solidarity within the movement. And that solidarity is eventually what's going to get us to win later on down the line. You know, we're going to be taking a lot of losses. We're going to be taking a lot of beatings over the next 4 years. And if we're going to be taking those beatings, we should be taking those beatings in public and making people see our wounds and see our bruises, and then, you know, building solidarity from that and moving forward and growing stronger.
That's a great point. And I think that, you know, it's not just kind of doing that in public, but doing that in public together. Right. You know, I think that, you know, one of our biggest enemies is isolation. You know, and the right wing has always known this, right? You isolate people, you control them better. And by doing that together, that, you know, solidarity is real. You know, this is something that we saw very clearly during our strike, the ABSCUF strike in the last fall, about what it looked like to have a vision of a different kind of community, right? One that was built on solidarity and mutual aid, and you're in this together, versus the kind of isolation that most of us usually live our lives. And that's why I think a lot of people have this very contradictory relationship with what's going on right now. On the one hand, there's like the horror of Trumplandia. And yet at the same time, there's this joy of resistance, right? And both of those things are true, right? And we shouldn't feel bad about the joy, because basically we're recognizing that, yes, together we are not alone. Together we can keep that vision alive and we can fight for that. So we hope to be one of the places to kind of, you know, to echo that, to kind of be a gathering point in the community, to kind of echo back the voices of that solidarity, right? To hold that up and to keep the fight alive and let them know that, you know, we're here kind of following what's going on, what people are, you know, we're following the lead of people on the ground doing the organizing. And we want to be one of the voices, right? One of the many voices, hopefully, but one of the voices that can help keep that word out and keep that flame alive. So, you know, with that, Sean, I'm really looking forward to kind of seeing you next week out in Harrisburg. You know, I get excited every year, but this year especially, I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah, it's going to be awesome. I'm looking forward to it. I'm looking forward to seeing the new faces that are going to be out here. I've gotten to I'm dragging this out more, but the lady who started the I got to sit down and talk to the lady who started Tuesday with Toomey out in Harrisburg. She's a biology professor at Susquehanna University in Selins Grove, which is like an hour up the road from here in Harrisburg. A small college in a small community, like in the middle of central Pennsylvania. No one really knows where it's at unless you literally have to show it to them on the map. It's one of those small, and she, Monday was the first time she's ever been in the Capitol for any type of committee hearing. And when she was in that hearing for the abortion vote, Senator Biscola, who has her issues with progressives and liberals in the state, she was the only woman on that committee that voted for, she didn't vote for it, that voted up on that abortion ban. And she gave a powerful speech in that room where she was basically yelling at everyone, why am I the only woman on this committee sitting in this room? And she's like, one day I want to see the Senate have 25 women. I want half the Senate to be filled with women. And it's one of the more powerful things I've seen. A couple of things, you know, Lisa Baker, conservative Republican from Northeastern PA, was the moment she took the Senate floor. And it's one of the things, like, just going through this process, seeing people getting involved, it's going to be fun seeing where we're going to go from here.
I agree, man. It's a great story. And I think that's a great kind of example of the everyday ways that we carry out these resistance. So until next week in Harrisburg, I've already made a deal with kind of one of our writers who's going to be out there that she is actually encouraged me to make sure that I'm well stocked with Pizza Boy beer and Free Will beer. So that will be kind of one of my contributions to our crew out there. And we hope that you'll come by our table, Raging Chicken. Raging Chicken will have a table there, a media table. Please come by, say hello, tell us what's going on in your neck of the woods, and you know, and then and sign up for our you know, for our email list, so you kind of get it in your email box every single day. And if you can, please go to our support and membership tab at RagingChickenPress.org and become a member or make a one-time donation. We need it now, folks, and we need to be in this together. So. With that, this is Kevin Mahoney, editor and founder of Raging Chicken. We'll be back next week from Harrisburg, folks. Until then, see ya!